This is Brian, call me the blind star of Fortune Gardener, coming to you from Ice Station Zeppelin, the Ramble on Towers Galley Studio in what USA Today called stupid cold Hespeler, Ontario. And you are listening to Ramble on Radio, episode 88. Ramble on Radio is the only dedicated Led Zeppelin podcast on this or any other known internets. Be sure to go to rambleonradio.com for Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and try as I might, any links I might mention during the show. You can subscribe to Ramble on Radio through iTunes. Listen, if you go to iTunes, if you're at iTunes for any reason, you're buying your new copy of Physical Graffiti, you're downloading Brandy and Coke, that would be the Zeppelin song released last week, whatever you're doing, pop over, just do a quick search, Ramble on Radio, it comes up right away. And not like the old days where it was buried in the search. It's now high on the search. So when you, if you actually put in the words Ramble on Radio, it comes right up. And leave a review. And it helps. It just helps with that search, for one. If you go Led Zeppelin and it comes up in the podcast, and that's people listening to it, people leaving reviews, that helps with that stuff. And also, so check us out as well on Spreaker. You can listen to it on Spreaker, S-P-R-E-A-K-E-R. And if you go to Spreaker, be sure to follow Ramble on Radio on Spreaker. And check it out at Ramble on Radio on YouTube. Follow Ramble on Radio on Facebook, Google Plus, and at Ramble on Blog on Twitter. And on Twitter, if you follow me on Twitter, I just posted two pictures of just before I started this podcast. Like, I turned on the intro music, and about 30 seconds in, stopped, took a picture because I had all my stuff laid out. And I also took a picture of a couple of pictures of the 8-track to show you for real. I have that 8-track, and there's a copy of it. And if you have no idea what an 8-track is, you can actually see a picture. And actually, funny story, at Christmas, we had, I have a friend, I went and see Acoustic Straubs last fall with a friend who's a big fan of the Straubs. And, he was over Christmas Eve with his family, and I had picked up, I'd been in a market or something, and found a Straubs, one of the early Straubs albums on 8-track. So I picked it up, so I pulled it out Christmas Eve, and his son is like 22 and a bit of a music geek. He couldn't believe what he was seeing. He's going, I've heard of 8-tracks. I had no clue. And so we had to put it in and show him how it works, how you click through the tracks. And I'm sure there are people listening to this who are in their, you know, 20s or 30s going, I have no idea when he talks about 8-tracks, what he's talking about. So you can at least see a picture. It's hard to, even as we were playing it for Jamie, he couldn't quite figure out what the heck was going on, why it was doing all this stuff. It was so bizarre to him. But in short, what happens is, it's a tape on a loop. And it's got four tracks. Funny, tracks are called tracks. And tracks are called... There's two different types of tracks on an 8-track. So there's four tracks on an 8-track. And each track has two tracks, a right and a left. So a tape has, you know, when you have a cassette tape, a stereo cassette tape, and it's got two sides, it has actually four tracks on it. It's got left and right side A and left and right side B. So this thing's got left and right track one, track two, track three, track four. Why they don't call them something other than tracks, one, two, three, four, I don't know. And so, I mean, it's the same thing. If your musicians were recording 32 tracks or 16 tracks, they had tape that had was separated into that many tracks, and tape heads that moved between those tracks. That's basically how it works. I have a 4-track recording machine, and those were cassette, and basically they just used the 4 tracks of a cassette all at once. So there was no law said the B-side track had to go this way or that way. So you could record on it. You just use regular cassettes. So that's how it works. And you can see the picture on Twitter. And that's all. I wasn't planning on saying that. The intro was a little 1975, February 16th, 3 days ago. On this very 3 days ago in 1975, 40 years ago, that was St. Louis, Missouri. Cashmere from St. Louis, Missouri. The reason I picked that date is it's the last date for a while. And the next one is like next Monday or Tuesday, and then they're off for, and then they're off into March, as their 1975 schedule went. So, or at least what I have of the, that's what I have of the recordings, the bootlegs from that show, those shows. So that's what you got. February 16th, St. Louis, Little Cashmere. So let's get on with it. Jimmy Page wins last night. Jimmy Page won NME's Rock and Soul Award, which is a made-up, I think, really what they wanted to call it was Most Righteous Dude Award. That's really seemed to be, it's a new award. It seemed to be made up specifically so Jimmy Page would show up at the ceremony. Well, he didn't actually release anything new this year, so we can't give him a Best Album Award or Best... You know, I suppose they could have gone Best Remastered Album, but they didn't want the bother of Robert Plant showing up or Jason Bonham, heaven forbid. So they just went with the Most Righteous Dude Award, gave it to Jimmy straight up, and there you go. You got a Jimmy Page speech from the platform, although it was short and sweet. You know, if you've seen that, it's I was going to drop his drop what he had to say, drop the intro of some band. I forget who they were. Never heard of them before. He had, but they did the intro, and then he came up, and I was gonna drop some of the quotes from that into the intro, but I couldn't get a YouTube download of the video I was looking at, so that didn't happen. But you watch the thing, he's way at the back, and he kind of has to walk through all these tables and stuff. And you think, if you're giving the guy, he's 72 years old, you're giving him the Most Righteous Dude Award, what the heck's with them making him walk? Why isn't he not sitting up front? Shouldn't he be at the head table, right up front, just pop up? I mean, it's not like he's 30 anymore. Although, in fairness, it didn't look like he was winded by the walk. You think of it that way, in terms of him being, what is he, 72? He's in pretty good shape. He looks in very good shape, and he moves comfortably looking. He doesn't look like a guy who's got bad arthritis of the hip or anything like that. He just, he looks well. Robert does too to agree, but he's stiffer. And what was the book? It was a book recently, one of the Robert Plant books last Christmas, I think. The voice that sailed the Zeppelin mentioned that he still has back pain, back trouble from his car accident in 1975, which we will talk about later this year. It would be 40 years. It was 40 years, but he still has. And it was on the Celebration Day. I think it was the New York City Celebration Day press junkets and stuff. I noted at the time Robert looked very stiff. He looked. He kind of moved his body, not his neck, when he was answering questions. He looked like a guy who had real back pain, real spine pain going on. And yeah, apparently he still has pain in his back. From that accident, but Jimmy not so much. He's pretty spry for his age. Still, that's no excuse for making him sit at the back. Nobody puts Jimmy in the back. Nobody puts Jimmy in the quarter, I guess is what it is, right? Speaking of Jimmy, this is going to be the Jimmy session. It is Physical Graffiti, by the way. Physical Graffiti Month, Week 3, and we will get there. But Jimmy... quite surprisingly dropped something new on us. Pre-orders are available for the new Jimmy Page album soundtracks. 4 LPs, CDs. And here's what it says from the website. Introducing Soundtracks by Jimmy Page, a special edition box set bringing together Jimmy Page's extraordinary compositions for the films Lucifer Rising and Death Wish 2, along with additional archive material for the first time. The quadruple box set is available. Pre-order now, and new discs, Lucifer Rising, The Second Coming, and Death Wish 2 Expansion, include rare, never-before-heard tracks. You can pre-order at jimmypage.com. Will be released March 6th, which is about 3 weeks from now. There are three versions available. A 4-CD, 4 times vinyl, a vinyl edition, a CD edition. Both of them are 4 discs. And a signed deluxe box set edition. Here's the numbers, and I won't be getting this point blank. And here's why. The vinyl edition, 4 vinyl records, £90 plus £21 shipping to Canada equals $215 Canadian dollars. It's $171 US dollars. Wasn't that long ago. We were sitting at par, and I was in Britain 2 years ago, and it was like $1.20. Pound a Canadian dollar. Now it's closer to $1.80, $1.90. It's getting almost back up to the 2 point something. So there's been a real correction of the monetary system. And the 4 times CD edition, 4 CDs, £30 plus £21 shipping. That is $98 here in Canada, $100 for CDs. And even that's too rich for my blood, I'm afraid. I did get a contact from somebody on Twitter who said I couldn't resist. And he turned out, I kind of thought, holy Jesus, $90. And he went, no, I got the CDs. In the States, a $70. I'm closer to a $70 buy than a $100 buy, you know? But I'm not really buying CDs these days. As I pointed out on Twitter, the only thing I'm buying on CD is the Zeppelin releases, the re-releases. And only because I really don't have most of it on CD. Through the years, I just never did get it. I bought 4 and I mean, anything new that came out, right? But and about a year or so ago, I bought Presence and the first album, which I just found in a UCD store, and they were $5 each, and I grabbed them just for the car, you know. And now I've replaced those with, well, I've replaced the first album with the new one, and I'll replace Presence. But I'm just buying car versions of this, so I will always be driving around with the Led Zeppelin. But that's it for CDs. I don't buy CDs, so I'm not buying this. And the signed deluxe edition, I couldn't access. I tried to click on to see what the cost was and what shipping was going to be and stuff. Do a faux order. See what I do for you people? I put together a faux order just so I can figure out. Those are exact costs, by the way, because that's what it was going to cost me to mail to me. But I couldn't access, and that's what I could. You can't access this page. I don't know if the super deluxe edition is sold out, if it was limited. I don't know if they said, no, you didn't order your CD, you didn't order your vinyl, and we know you're not ordering this, or if the page is just down right now. But I think it was £400. I think that's what it was in the range. Maybe it was $400, maybe it was like £250. But I think it was £400 for the signed deluxe edition, which would put, you know, really would put things at the... $600 range for me, $600-$700 range. There's not a chance of that one happening. I'll buy the scarf first, to be honest with you. But he hasn't announced one way or the other if there will be digital releases of this. I'm guessing not, but I'm thinking it will be available anyway. We'll see. We'll see. I'll wind up with a copy of it somehow, some way. Probably not a CD or vinyl copy, but I'm sure I will find a download of it so I can listen to it and review it for you folks, tell you guys what I'm hearing. But really, it's you know, if you have Lucifer Rising and think, I didn't really like it, or Death Wish 2, and I didn't really like that, it's more of the same. It's the stuff that didn't make the first albums. So, there has been reports that there's some really interesting stuff on there, and there might be some songs that just weren't suitable for a movie soundtrack sort of thing that are excellent. But one would think they would have wound up an Outrider. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what's on this, I guess. And I wish there was a way it was more available. the $21 shipping really burns you at the exchange rate I'm paying. You know, now it's an extra $35 sort of thing to ship the damn thing. That hurts. I won't have them, but I'm sure I will hear them, is what it boils down to. And I will let you know what I hear when I hear it. And that's about 3 weeks. That's a nice break after Physical Graffiti if I get the chance to talk about that once Physical Graffiti month's over. Okay, so today's topic is, of course, Physical Graffiti Week 3, the second LP, sides 3 and 4 of Physical Graffiti. A couple of things before I start. I've seen a promo item on the internet today, a Physical Graffiti Rubik's Cube. And sorry about this. I had to stop things there and take a break. The dog had to run out back and check on the submarine poking through the ice. All is well. So it's back to this. So the Rubik's Cube, Physical Graffiti Rubik's Cube, and it's got basically the cover on each side, and I'm guessing variations on the cover with different, you know, the front back, different. I don't know. Maybe front back plus the two inside, with the pictures and stuff. You know, yeah. But that makes six sides, so that would make sense, wouldn't it? So there's that, and I have to get two of those. Hopefully they're available just in the store, and I'm gonna buy two. One to have as a on my desk, and one to mess up, because I'll never get it back together. So there's no point in messing it up and then saying, oh, so at least I'll have one sitting on the desk. And I was thinking about that as the dog was out checking on the submarine, actually. This would be a great idea for In Through the Outdoor, because In Through the Outdoor had six different covers. So you could put all six different covers on the Rubik's Cube. That'd be kind of a cool thing to do, yeah? So hopefully that'll come. Hopefully that's not something that they just made up and are giving out to favorite people in the press and whatnot. And it's something that's actually for sale in the stores. Because that'd be kind of a cool thing. All right, today, Thursday, February 19th at 2 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Greenwich Mean Time. If you go on Yahoo, they have a listening to the Physical Graffiti bonus stuff. The same stuff like Dave Lewis went a couple of weeks ago. You know, he brings people into the studio and they play some tracks from the bonus material. And it's the same stuff. It'd be the same kind of thing. So you'd hear three or four of the tracks. Possibly, and a question and answer with Jimmy. I believe the questions were put in ahead of time. Now, I won't be able to work with you on this one. I would love to, I would love to sit, listen to it, and write up a review and get that on the website fast, fast, fast. But unfortunately, I leave for work at 2 o'clock. The day job calls. So that's not going to happen. But if you get a chance to listen, hit me up on Twitter and let me know how you liked it, what you liked, what you didn't like. I come across this week too. I wanted to. I've started looking at the 75 tour, and there was a book by Stephen Davis a few years ago, who was on that tour, was on part of that tour, and it's kind of his. He discovered his notes from that tour. They've been lost for about 20 years, if not longer, and he kind of found them. Somebody else found them, I think, or anyway, they got discovered in a box. And so Davis wrote a book on the 70, like called Led Zepp 75. I reviewed it way back when. Remarkable thing. I thought it was a year or two ago. It was like 5-6 years ago. It goes way back. Way back. Yeah, but it's a much older book than I thought it was. And I thought I had talked about it on this podcast, but I think it goes back to before the podcast. So I definitely wrote a review, and I actually recall I have Amazon links on my website, and it was this book that got me thinking about doing that. I had never done it before, and I'd seen somebody else reviewed it and had the Amazon links, and I thought, that makes sense. How do I do that? So I got into the research of it, and that's where we're at. But anyway, so going through it, he one of the first things he does, and there's a great, I'll probably talk about it later, but there's a great quote in there about him being music editor at Rolling Stone magazine and knowing nothing about Led Zeppelin. And he saw them in 1969 at the Boston Tea Party, and that was the last he kind of heard of them. Loved them, by the way. He loved the first album. He loved them in those days. But then he went into professional rock music criticism, and he wasn't allowed to love Led Zeppelin. And he, basically what he says is, you know, you couldn't do my job and be a Led Zeppelin fan. So he had to actually go and find the music and listen to it. And so he got a preview, he got an early copy of Physical Graffiti. And he listened to the first album. And after Kashmir, he kind of put it down and got a cup of tea. And he makes this comment, would it, rock music, ever get any better than this? So would it being rock music, right? Is would it dash rock music dash? He's talking about the album. So would rock music get any better than this? And it's yeah, that's a probably a fair in retrospect. That's probably a fair note. Would it? I would argue no. I would argue that, as a matter of fact, 75 was probably the last great year for rock music. There was some good stuff to come. But that kind of, almost silly when you think back on it now, the 72, 73, 74, 75, the music, there was really fabulous music by so many artists doing so many interesting things. And would it ever be that good again? Would rock music in totality be as good as it was in 75, 74, 73, and was Physical Graffiti then the apex of that? And I think an argument can be made in both cases, looking back. But anyway, that was just an interesting note, I think. One kind of a final note, ended on Kashmir last time, being the end of the record, not the 8-track. The 8-track, side 2 of the 8-track is Bron Rahr, not Kashmir. But having ended on Kashmir, my final note was Robert Plant has, in fact, called it the height of Led Zeppelin powers. And I was watching a video on Physical Graffiti, and one of the guys mentioned, it's an abject lesson on how not to overplay. That there's a lot of space in Kashmir that Bonham just leaves, doesn't fill the space. There's a lot of space in the guitars, and Bonham absolutely restrains himself from overplaying, from filling the holes. And it's one of the reasons it's so good, so heavy, so thunderous, is it's just played straight up, right? And there's not a lot. So it's an abject lesson on how not to overplay a song. And I thought that was a good quote. All right, so let's get to the music part. 23 minutes in, we're only getting to the music. Holy cow. Good thing this is a music podcast. All right, so side three of Physical Graffiti goes In the Light, Bron Rahr, Down by the Seaside, 10 Years Gone. As I've noted too many times before, in the on the 8-track, it goes In the Light, Down by the Seaside, 10 Years Gone. I have notes. Let's just go with the note, right? So In the Light was done for this album, Hedley Grange, 1974. It starts with the drone, Jones's drone on the keyboard, and I think there is some violin bow guitar going on a bit. There's a number of tempo changes in the song. It jumps up and down tempo wise. Which is kind of not something that's done a lot, and bands don't do, and bands I played with, my last band, my drummer would be apoplectic if we tried to do this song. He would be telling you, you're wrong. No, you cannot. People will be sitting in the audience thinking, what a bunch of amateurs, the tempo changed. And you're, you know, like, tempo changes are if they're done well, actually show something else, right? But it does change quite a bit through there. And there's a very, very interesting guitar bass lick in there. And it's probably one Jones written. And I don't have it for you. But, you know, there's kind of the basic licks. And then there's this one that pops up in the middle. And it's a bit of a rundown. backwards run on a scale, and just a very interesting, like, a very neat, interesting, like, this one though loses me. It's just not a favorite of mine. Yeah, I kind of think I don't get this one sometimes. You know, it's not a sound I particularly like, and but here you go. So Bron Rahr was recorded at Island Studio for the third album. It was written at Bron Rahr, the cottage Bron Rahr in Wales, when the boys went and Jimmy and Robert and the girlfriends and a few roadies went and just kind of roughed it for a while with acoustic guitars, and they came back with things like That's the Way, and this, which was recorded but not put on the third album, probably because the third album was already had enough acoustic stuff. You know what I mean? It's probably kind of the way that went. And it's a bit of an interlude in the middle of this album. You know, you've had some very, very heavy duty stuff, right? Stuff like Kashmir and In My Time of Dying and In the Light Again has that drone kind of thing going on. So Bron Rahr is kind of a bit of an interlude. And it's a pretty little piece. I have played here before that, my own recording of it. I've used it as an intro and outro a few times. And I have it on my, kind of in iTunes, just as, you know, I store it there. And my wife one day had my iPod, and she's kind of going through and saw my name on it and listened to what I had played, and she came back and said, "I really like that." I said, "Well, yeah, it's a Jimmy Page piece. That's why you like it so much." And then she went, "Oh, I don't like it that much." Is this what your wives do, by the way? This is my wife for sure. But it's a pretty little piece. That's all, you know. But that's all it really is. Now, Down by the Seaside, again, for the third album, Olympic Studio. Both Island and Olympic Studio, apparently. It started as an acoustic, originally. It's kind of, if you break the song down to its component parts, it's kind of like a Crosby, Stills, Nash song. As a matter of fact, it's very much considered to be inspired by Down by the River. Which I don't necessarily see from a vocal or lyrical sound. I think the Down By the throws people into this. It's just like Down by the River. But it is definitely I don't hear it in the melody, you know. But it was meant to be an acoustic song, and actually originally had Robert playing strumming guitar on it. But it got, as happens with Led Zeppelin, it got built up into something else. I've always liked this song. Always liked this song. It's just, it's a pretty song. And, it's such a nice one. They did record this, by the way, considered a Neil Young song. They did record it around the time they played with Neil Young and Steve Stills in a London bar in September 74 after a huge gig for CSNY at Wembley Stadium. And it was right around the same time that they recorded it and worked on it. So that's another reason people see the Neil Young inspiration, I suspect. And it's probably true. It's probably there to some degree. And side three ends with 10 years gone. It's Plant's yearning for a kind of a past love, a look back. It's supposed to be about a woman that 10 years earlier, which I guess would be 65, was his first love, and basically gave him the it's the music or the me ultimatum, and he chose the music. But it's not, this is not a mean-spirited look back going, see what you passed up on. This is kind of a look back going, oh, you know, just kind of remembering a time, I think. It's almost a ballad, almost. They did this live in the 77 tour, and this is what Jones pulled the triple neck for, and they kind of talked, there's an interview somewhere where Jimmy talks about the triple neck and how it allowed them to really open up a song like 10 Years Gone. They did play it. They played it at the warm-ups in 79 for Nebworth. They played it at the first Nebworth, not the second one. And probably they had technical problems with the triple neck guitar in the first week. So it's probably why it got dropped for the second week. They probably said, this just isn't worth the trouble it's causing us. Never a song I was big on. And never you know, funny thing. And then somebody wrote a couple of years ago, and I talked about it on this. Somebody wrote a little blog. It was like his 10 Led Zeppelin songs that meant the most to him and why they meant the most to him. And it was a very personal little blog, very nicely written, very personal little thing. And one of the songs was 10 Years Gone. And it was him who kind of turned me around on 10 Years Gone, made me go. And I kind of started to listen to it. And yeah, there's really some, it's a really pretty song. It's a lovely little song. And it's one of my favorites now. I'm very big on 10 Years Gone. It's a great song. It really is. But it took for somebody to point that out to me almost, you know? And around the time I decided that I really liked 10 Years Gone was probably around the time I decided I really liked Physical Graffiti, because you start going through it, going, okay, now we're down to I'm Not Nuts on In the Light. You know, what else don't I like in this album? This is a great album. Side 3 was never my favorite before, and probably the excuse for not listening to this album very much. If I did listen to it, by the way, I listened to Side 4. Always liked Side 4. Always liked Night Flight. Always liked Black Country Woman. And, of course, Want and Song and Sick Again are good rockers, too. So, you know, Side 4 was always my favorite of the sides. Side 3 my least favorite. But once I opened up to 10 Years Gone, then Side 3 became a lot better, too. All right, so let's get to Side 4. Night Flight, recorded for the fourth album at the Headley Grange studio, at Headley Grange with the Rolling Stones mobile studio, not with the Ronnie Lane mobile studio, but with the Rolling Stones one. It's about dodging the draft. It was recorded in December 71 in the sessions for the fourth album. And it's a great rocker, and it's got that. I absolutely love when he comes in with that boogie-woogie rock rhythm in the chorus. And if you don't know what I mean, sorry about your luck. I'm not about to try and recreate it without a guitar here. But he does, it's basically the Chuck Berry riff, the Chuck Berry rhythm. It's common, so common in rock and roll, and Jimmy used it sparingly and often for a bar here or a bar there. Sick Again's another one where he uses it, but he uses it very differently. He uses it on a kind of an offbeat rhythm, and only in the verse. In Night Flight, he pulls it out in the chorus, and just for a bar, and then goes right back into the song. And he does it, and it's just great. It just really gives the song a lift. I really love this song. I'm big on Night Flight. The Wanton Song. I like this quote. It was Carnal Plant. Recorded at Headley Grange in 74 for this album with the Ron. Now I got to think of what the Ronnie Lane's mobile studio. Only said it 30 seconds ago, so it's understandable why I would forget. And this is just a good rocker and Plant at his carnal best. And they played it in some early 75 dates, and then dropped it. This is another one. If you break it down, the verses, the chords in the verses are actually very jazzy. And if you kind of slowed it down and took off the distortion, this could be this could be a little jazz standard. They're very jazzy chords, but of course, Page plays them in such a way as you don't recognize that point. So it's a very, if you get a chance to have somebody do that, it's a very interesting little read, or a very interesting little listen. But it's, you know, cool sounding song. A Boogie with Stew, recorded for the fourth album at Headley Grange with the Rolling Stones Mobile Studio. Written by Bonham Jones, Page Plant, Ian Stewart, and Mrs. Valens. Ian Stewart was what's known as the sixth Rolling Stone. He was their keyboard player in the early days and got dumped because he didn't have the right look. But he stayed with them forever and ever and ever as their road manager. And he kind of been responsible for the Stones in a large way for years and years and years. And he was the guy who went around with the mobile studio. So he kind of, his job was to bring the mobile studio out and to stay with it, babysit it in a way. And it probably, he was the guy who explained where, okay, this chord goes here. That's, you know, a lot of the technical stuff of the truck would be his job. So they got into a jam with Ian Stewart, and they did Boogie with Stu. It's basically an old rock and roll classic called Ooh My Head by Ritchie Valens. So Jimmy had heard that Ritchie Valens' mother, he died in the plane crash with the Big Bop, the day the music died, with Big Bopper and Buddy Holly. And he was like an 18, 19-year-old kid. His mother had never got any royalties. That the contracts he signed for his record company basically screwed over his estate, his family, after he died. And the money went into, you know, the greedy guys. So they decided to slip a songwriting credit to Mrs. Valens so she would get some money from it. Problem is, they got sued by Ritchie Valens' estate. The greedy screwballs who took all his money wanted this money too. So they tried to do the right thing. It still didn't work out for them. But it's really based on, Ooh My Head by Ritchie Valens. But the reality, the ultimate irony is, I mean, it's a Little Richard song called Ooh My Soul. And Ritchie Valens completely ripped it off from Little Richard. And if you hear Ooh My Soul to Ooh My Head to Boogie with Stu, you hear that connection. There's no denying the connection between Ooh My Soul and Boogie with Stu. Or Ooh My Head. They're the same song. So they tried to do the right thing. Didn't work out so well. And one hopes Little Richard sued the shit out of the Ritchie Valens estate after that, but probably not. Black Country Woman was recorded at the Garden at Stargraves, which is another mansion they did some recording at for the Houses of the Holy album with the Rolling Stones Mobile. In 1972, they recorded it outside. They decided to record it outside. In the same session that recorded Jamaica, by the way. And they did it was the vocals they did outside. And of course, the plane flew over. And you can hear the engineer asking, should we record it? Should we roll it, Jimmy? Should we roll it? And I think it's Robert says, nah, leave it in. Leave it. Let's go. So they got the very big outside, airy vocals. It's one of the great things about them is the way they were kind of very prepared to just do something different. We don't have to be in this environment to record an album. Let's just get outside and sing and set it up so that it works. And, so much of what they did worked wonderfully. But it takes, it takes a production guy. That's the mastery of Jimmy Page as a producer. In a lot of ways, would be the way they can do that. They can set up in different places, and at the end, it sounds like one coherent whole. It sounds like they were recorded more or less in the same. They have different aura to them, almost different feels to them, but not different sounds. It's an ambiance is what they create with their studio changes. But it sounds like it all belongs together in the same album, and that's kind of the magic of Jimmy Page. He gets into the mixing side of things and is able to produce things down so there's very similar. Finally, the album ends with Sick Again, recorded for this album, Headley Grange, 1974, the Ronnie Lane Mobile Studio. It's just a mid-tempo rocker, really. Examination of the groupie culture, quote unquote. Somewhere I've picked that quote up, but it's got that great kind of, again, the Chuck Berry look in the verse. And then the great run up, boop, 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 boop. It's E, F sharp, G, A, C, D, E. The title is, this is the most interesting, and this comes from Ron Neverson, who on the video that I have on Physical Graffiti talks about this, but he thinks this is right. This is how he remembers it, but he says, he also qualifies it, I could be wrong. But as he remembers it, this, the the title of the song comes from the sound of the hi-hat. The hi-hat's going, sick again, sick again, sick again, sick again. So that's kind of the sound that that Bonham's getting in the hi-hat. And that's where the title of that song comes from. They picked up on that and remembered it. So that's it, Physical Graffiti. The wait is over. Physical Graffiti month is almost over. We've got through it. And next up is the remasters. The remaster album's out next Tuesday. So for next week's podcast, we will be talking about the albums. We will be talking about the new material, the bonus material. I expect... Well, I get it on iTunes anyway, so it comes down to me on Tuesday morning. What's Saturday? Well, Monday night when I get home from work, it'll probably be there. I'll be able to listen to it. Certainly Tuesday. I won't be... I've talked about whether I'd be buying the box set. I won't be at this point in time. I have not been a good little saver, so I don't have quite that much money sitting in the bank. So it's... And I have kind of a separate pot of gold that I put aside for things like this, and it's. But I also use it for all sorts of little things, and I'll be buying the CD for certain, I don't think the box set. So I won't be discussing the box set next week. Let's put it that way. But I think I've kind of decided I'm going to get the box set at some point. We'll have to see. We'll have to see how it all plays out. But enjoy getting the new album if you're getting it. Enjoy listening to new material. Enjoy listening to it early. I'm sure it's hitting the Yahoo's. He's going to be playing some songs on Yahoo this afternoon. If you get a chance to listen to that, enjoy it. And it's a great time to be a Led Zeppelin fan because we got all this great new music coming down the pike and great remasters. And it's just it's a lot of fun, isn't it? So we got, and there's so much to talk about. March is coming now. We have the new Jimmy Page to talk about in March. Plus we have the 75 tour to talk about in March. So March is going to get killed very fast too. Plus we have, I think March features the anniversary of the Black Crowes album being released. I talked quite a bit last fall about when the concert was. Whether I have any more to say on the album, I don't know. But we have to kind of step into that and honor it a bit. So March is going to be as busy a month as February for us by the looks of it, and that's a good thing. And then comes April and the thaw. So let's get through the cold month, which is about a month left of the cold. Let's get through that, and then we'll talk about whether 3 weeks off to enjoy the sun. That's it for Ramblin' Radio episode 88. Check RamblinRadio.com for notes on this week's podcast, Led Zeppelin news, reviews, and any links mentioned in today's podcast. Follow Ramblin' Radio on Facebook, Google+, and at Ramblin' Blog on Twitter. You can subscribe to Ramblin' Radio through iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review if you go to iTunes. Listen on Spreaker, Spreaker, if you're on Spreaker. If you have an account on Spreaker, follow Ramblin' Radio. It helps out. And check us out at Ramblin' Radio on YouTube, where a number of the podcasts are also YouTubed. And in the future, I will be doing about 1 in 4 will find the way to YouTube in the future. But if you want to see what I look like, you want to see what the Dungeon Studio looks like, you want to see what the Galley Studio looks like, YouTube's the place. Thanks for listening to Ramblin' Radio, episode 88. Keep it cool and babies. I keep it cool and baby. I keep it cool and baby.
I'm sure there'll be internet forums telling me what I'm doing.
Switch off the internet.